Voice of Fintech.
Welcome to Voice of Fintech, a podcast mapping out the Swiss and global fintech scene, connecting fintech enthusiasts with startups, incubators, accelerators, business angels and VCs, and incumbents interested in partnerships. Voice of Fintech will help you navigate the fintech ecosystem. Here you can listen to the startup founder stories, what investors and incumbents are looking for when dealing with startups, and find out more about resources provided by incubators and accelerators. My name is Rudy Falad, and I'll be hosting this podcast. Hello and welcome to Voice of Fintech. Today we're going to travel to Boston, Massachusetts, and we're going to talk about sandboxing, venture investing. We talk why is it needed for fintech businesses? How does it work in the US and globally as well? Because we have Sarah Biller with us, and she's going to tell us more about her perspective on investing and why she decided to help fintech startups through a nonprofit called Fintech Sandbox. So welcome, Sarah. How are you today?
Rudy, I'm great. How are you?
I'm all right. Not everybody is as great as you are.
Well, it's a spring day in Boston. Finally, we see the spring flowers.
Welcome and great to have you here. So let's start with sharing a little bit about yourself. We are eager to learn about your journey. What led you to your current role? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, Rudy, thank you again for the opportunity to share just a modest amount. I've had a very nonlinear career. I have to say I'm a perennially curious individual, having grown up in the mountains of West Virginia, where there's not much to do but think, to be honest. And I've had just a trajectory that's taken me through various sectors from the telecommunications, global telecommunications industry into life sciences, and more recently, financial services. The last 15 years of my career, I've spent in the intersection of large operating organizations, whether they're a 40 Act asset manager or a large custody bank. And in between, really sought to be a bridge of innovation, of the adoption of technology. And so I've had my own companies during those phases. And I think the common thread through all of those roles is that I've been in a position both personally and professionally to invest in the next generation of founders.
That's great stuff. So can you provide some insights into Vantage Ventures and Fintech Sandbox? What sets them apart? And what are the unique focuses for each of them?
Yeah, Rudy, there it's interesting. I again, always try to draw that thread through disparate initiatives that I'm involved in. Vantage Ventures is with intentionality an initiative that is sitting in the Appalachian region of the United States, which is quite distressed. For those of you who are familiar with it, you'll see a lot of extraction economy, a lot of different sort of heavy industry. I created Vantage Ventures with John Chambers of Cisco Systems specifically to follow a vision he had where we could use the lessons of early stage business formation, of moving capital into companies that are in their earliest stages but capital efficient and have global problem sets they're solving. We could move that capital into these regions and actually see if we could expand and diversify the economy. It's been a true labor of love, and it's a reflection of how Fintech Sandbox got started over a decade ago. I co-founded it with one of the most, I think, world's greatest investors. I say that very humbly, David Jagan from F Prime Capital. David and I co-founded Fintech Sandbox with two other founders who were all experiencing over a decade ago the same challenges I confronted in my startup. I had built a predictive analytics platform for institutional bond investors. And the obstacle I confronted, or what we faced really in the wake of the credit crisis, if we all can remember that, in our efforts to aggregate and quantify non-financial factors was access to data. And David was seeing that from his portfolio companies as well. And so we came together really with this idea of, could we again put some sort of asset In my case, at Vantage, we try to put capital and knowledge in the hands of entrepreneurs. In the case of FinTech Sandbox, enable other entrepreneurs to more effectively procure data. We do that with an amazing list of global data providers, and we do it for free. So we don't charge for it or we don't take equity. And in this case, when the data is put in the hands of these next generation entrepreneurs globally, they're innovating against enormous problem sets that we think will be impactful, that will also drive the face of financial services and enable us to build an industry that, frankly, works for anyone, no matter where they are. And we want it to work at any time. And so underneath that, you can imagine there's a lot of different technology companies that we collaborate with through our data residency access program at FinTech Sandbox.
I see.
I've chosen FinTech Sandbox and through my own life experience to believe that the power of capital, and even more acutely, the power of the capital markets, is one of the great forces that we need to harness if we're really going to have a well-functioning society, which, of course, is embedded in the frictionless movement of money. So that's what we're talking about. And my focus has been U.S.-based by and large, but I am honored to sit on the board, for instance, and invested in a company that's based in London, and the CEO is Austrian. And so we know, we have to remind ourselves that we know no boundaries in financial services in the way that money flows, because the minute we decide to de-globalize or to be insular, we will fail ourselves in our ability, again, that thesis around driving capital into problem solvers.
All right.
Particularly in fintech, there's an opportunity from their technology to embed it in adjacent industry categories or adjacent markets. So we look for the big open thinkers who have hit some saturation in their existing market and understand that technology itself has an opportunity to go into the next market.
And then can you give me some examples about companies? As I said, some companies, it's more about business model innovation, and others, it's about technology that is their key angle.
Yeah, I'm interested in entrepreneurs who are digitizing the financial markets. And that can be anywhere in the back, middle, or front office. I prefer actually when an entrepreneur is actually digitizing in the back office today because of the latency in our innovation cycle in infrastructure. And if you look at the asset classes, for instance, I'm an investor in Rialto Markets. That's a FINRA regulated US-based company that has created a digital platform for compliance for Reg A and Reg CF fundraising for private companies. It's a very exciting time for private companies to be raising capital, whether it's equity or debt, on these types of platforms. And it also, for me, it really broadens the aperture of opportunity to all investors, where the private company asset marketplace has long been the purview of high net worth. I take it to the other side, the company that I mentioned to you that is headquartered in London, Caleb, is digitizing the ADR market and envisioning how we remove the friction in the ability of companies beginning in the UK, but across Europe, to tap into the US capital markets. There's also an emerging demand for that type of access to capital from LATAM. And so I'm particularly passionate about the ability for those two companies on different sides of the category of company organization, both to have the ability to use technology to more efficiently access pools of capital.
All right, understood. So digitizing financial markets, including infrastructure, or even preferably, right? What about themes such as financial inclusion, diversity, digital identity?
I think each of those categories you just mentioned, I do consider very closely. I am currently very involved in thinking about digital identity as an example, because it is our last, what I consider one of our last major intractable challenges, but foremost in everyone's mind, that we're confronting in financial services. I don't think any of us believe for a minute that financial services is going to roll back the wheel and actually not avail itself of the digital technologies and the cost efficiencies and the ability to reach new customers. But what it means to everyone, not just in the US, but globally, is this notional idea that we can authenticate either the individual or the device or the application that we're working on. So I do have a large body of personal work that I'm doing there, as well as an investment thesis. I deeply care around inclusion. I think that it is one of the most important things that we can do, which is to figure out, we've been 2,000 years building this system of financial services. It is time for us to now drive technology and drive application into populations who otherwise aren't part of our modern financial services system. It's really good for everyone, including the individuals who own small businesses. And so I think that's my third theme, Rudy, that I really today am focused on. I'm an investor in a community bank in the United States, and I'm a bank director because our engine of growth in the United States, and perhaps therefore influencing the world economy, is how well we can bank our small businesses, those organizations that are on Main Street that generally have less than 7 employees. And so I've also really picked up that thematic for myself in the fintech world, is how do we actually ensure that we have a very strong, compliant, capable small banking industry. And that necessitates, too, that we help those banks understand how to adopt technology and also how the regulators look at technology and make sure that we're partners in a regulatory environment to the adoption of technology.
All right. So from what you've seen from your career as an entrepreneur and investor, what are your best tips? What are your best tips for entrepreneurs to grow their companies?
Yeah, I think the foremost one is why we started Fintech Sandbox, and that is really entrepreneurs in financial services in particular, make sure that you are focused on the quality of the data, the accessibility of the data that you can get your hands on. It's very hard. It will be very hard for any entrepreneur at this stage to not have a laser-like focus on the management of data and its uses, as well as the challenges and risks that data may present when you're building your company. And I think about the application, which is table stakes today for fintech, that application layer that's using artificial intelligence. It is critically important that when we see entrepreneurs, that they have contemplated where there are gaps in their data, where they may have bias in their data, because each of those decisions that you're making about the financial application, whether it's in the way that payments are made, the way lending models are built, institutional or retail investing for sure, you want to mitigate the risks that are coming out of the application of AI-generated outcomes based on data. So first thing, I think that's a thesis for all entrepreneurs who are building the next generation of fintech. The other, of course, it goes without saying, we are quickly evolving the way that customers think about their financial lives. And the only thing that I think is outpacing the building of new technology and financial services is that in which the customer believes that you can introduce to them the next great technology application to remove the friction in the way that they whatever bank, share what Venmo, share money with their friends. And this is a risk for entrepreneurs to get caught up in trying to keep up with that pace of customer expectations. And so there's a fine line to balance there between rapidly deploying new capabilities in your company and margin contraction. And so I think the days of growth at any cost are over. But how do you also balance the tension that you just talked about, Rudy, which is everyone wants you to grow? And so I look for entrepreneurs who can hold those two different thoughts in their mind and come up with a resolution and a cogent answer about how they're going to manage both as they grow their company.
Absolutely. I think the growth at any cost, unfortunately or fortunately, is behind us. But you also talked about providing cutting edge or 21st century standard banking for smaller customers. That's also related to a big topic of digital identity. And I'm coming back to that angle that you mentioned that you like to invest in fintechs that build infrastructure for banks. And that is sometimes linked to an old saying, data is new oil. So if you talk about digital identity, infrastructure, and access to data that you need to build anything useful for banks, can you share any of your insights on this? Because we've got companies that say we need to get data to train our algorithms. We need to pay for this. That's a problem. We don't get useful data, things like this. Everybody talks about big data, but it's nothing useful that you can do anything with it. So how do you access data that is useful for you to build businesses in financial infrastructure?
Yeah, just to underscore again, the criticality of finding useful data in a way that, you know, manages against it. The procurement process is so long and fraught. And then also that you may be at risk of not actually getting the data set you need. We've been working on that problem at FinTech Sandbox for a decade. And so for the entrepreneurs who are seeking data where they can go, they can ingest it into their environment and build models around, certainly welcome them to join us in the Data Residency Access Program at FinTech Sandbox. Again, it's a not-for-profit. We do it for free, and we do not take equity. And we do that because that was a challenge that I personally faced it, and I never want another entrepreneur to have to face again the inability to further their idea, which could drive immense impact. We want them to have that data. So that's what we do at FinTech Sandbox. I think, though, we're moving with the advent of generative AI, and certainly it's the next generation of AI, which most certainly will be iterative, meaning it will not just be a question and answer. It will be it will be responsive in ways that I think probably move us towards a more human-like construct. That application means that we need to ourselves as an industry, and these are not my words. I learned them last week in conversation with a dear friend of mine, Jim Smith, who's been an industry advisor for a long time. We're moving from a world where we have streaming data, where you have, you know, real-time access to stock ticks, as an example. We're moving rapidly from streaming data to streaming insights, which means that layer of data that's coming to you will have overlaid on top of it the ability for interpretation, for complex querying. We're operating in a really complex systems problem today in financial services that just got a lot more hairier because overnight we saw the leapfrog application of artificial intelligence to help us discern and interrogate very dense data sets, really in near real time. So when I think about the question you ask, data, new oil, absolutely. And now the question is, what do you do with that data? It's just not enough to ingest it. Now you need to be in a position to ask for insights or ask for information.
Okay, so which leads me to another question. Can you share some success stories of the FinTech Sandbox?
Yeah, I think we were fortunate right out of the gate. We partnered, and they were well down their path, but we partnered with Kensho, which at its time of exit was the largest exit or acquisition by a larger company in the AI space. And so Kensho was acquired by S&P Global, another fantastic data partner of FinTech Sandbox. We've been partners with Clarity AI, which you may see their footprint in the European marketplace on how to actually quantify sustainable exposure by company, really thinking about ESG metrics. We supported Petal in their work to build a more inclusive operating environment for financial services. Petal was, I think, in some ways inspired by our model that they're now taking their capabilities, which they're valued at post $1 billion, and themselves creating data banks where other entrepreneurs can actually innovate on top of what Petal is creating with their own customer base. So those are just a handful of the successes. We've supported over 300 companies. We began in Boston as we started this conversation, but quickly went across the United States. And today we support entrepreneurs, I kind of joke with the team, on every continent but Antarctica. And so I think that the success story of FinTech Sandbox is still in its infancy, because we know there are great FinTech founders across the world, and we want to be able to get data in their hands to build the next generation of industry. Again, that's a very thoughtful approach to the movement of money and to serving others.
Perfect. So before I let you go, I just have two easy questions for you. The first one is, do you have a favorite business book or another learning source that you can share with listeners?
I'm a ferocious reader, Rudy. It won't surprise you. I'm actually right now deeply passionate about a non-business book. I am reading The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. And Rick is an acclaimed music producer in the United States. He backed and produced records for guys like the Beastie Boys and even all the way to Johnny Cash and to The Cult. And he reminds us that creativity means that you actually have to suppress our inclinations as mathematical people, for lack of a better way to talk about it, to want to design things that have plausible explanations. Right. We want to really move all sort of analysis against things we don't understand. And I think in his work, he really talks about the idea that when we reduce our parameters of thinking to those known experiences or those known outcomes in complex system design, you might call those plausible extremes, he suggests don't do that. And I love it because it really opens my mind when I read the book to thinking that I need to suppress what I know today if I'm going to build or invest or partner with entrepreneurs who are building for a future that we don't yet know. So I'm really into Rick Rubin's writings right now and his book, The Creative Act.
Wonderful. So I'll make sure to put a link to this in the show notes. Last question is, what's the best way to reach out, or who would you like to hear from most?
Yeah, Rudy, thank you. I think the best way to reach out these days is via LinkedIn. It makes it a lot easier for individuals I don't know to get to know me and conversely have a little bit of background. But I'm deeply interested, to be honest, in the non-traditional financial services entrepreneur. I think fintech, as it finds its way in adjacent industries, as we know, has a role, for instance, you and I have spent a little bit of time today on identity and other infrastructure areas. I want to hear from entrepreneurs who are broadening our thinking in fintech.
So check out Sarah Biller on LinkedIn, and good luck to Sarah and to FinTech Sandbox in Boston and Vantage Ventures.
Rudy, thank you. What a treat.
Thank you for listening to Voice of FinTech podcast. If you haven't already, check out also voiceoffintech.com, where you will find all the episodes and additional resources related to the podcast. You can also subscribe to Voice of FinTech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or any other podcast app that you like. If you have any suggestions on the topics or guests, or how to make this podcast better for you, please email us at info@voiceoffintech.com. Happy to hear from you. Thank you.